Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance.
I'm Christopher Cruz, reporting from the Washington Bureau. There's been a mass shooting at a Martin Luther King Day event.
Residents of Fort Pierce, Florida, were celebrating a Martin Luther King Jr. Day car show on what was dubbed a family fun day when shots rang out.
There was a disagreement of some sort between two parties. And unfortunately, they chose to resolve that with guns.
St. Lucie County Deputy Brian Hester says 8 people were shot, 1 critically, and 4 other people were injured in the chaos that ensued after the shots rang out.
We probably got 30 to 40 personnel out between here and following up leads, as well as the hospital.
They believe there was more than one shooter. Matt Piper, CBS News.
Police in Albuquerque, New Mexico say a state House candidate who lost his election in November conspired to shoot at 4 lawmakers' homes. More from KRQE-TV reporter Chris McKee.
Solomon Pena, he lost in the election, now being arrested, facing charges, accused of essentially conspiring with 4 other men to shoot at the homes of Albuquerque area elected officials.
Republicans are demanding information about who may have had access to classified documents kept at President Biden's home in Delaware. CBS News White House correspondent Stephen Portnoy has more on that.
With classified papers kept at Joe Biden's home, House Republicans have demanded logs of visitors to the president's Wilmington residence. But the White House says no such records exist. And whether it was Donald Trump's home at Mar-a-Lago, or George W. Bush's ranch in Texas, or any other private home of a president, no visitor logs are ever kept.
President Biden will travel to California's Central Coast on Thursday to visit areas that have been hit by the extreme weather. New details are emerging about the source of the money that helped pay for the campaign of New York Congressman George Santos, who's admitted lying about his resume and family background. More from CBS's Scott McFarland.
There's already been an ethics complaint filed by some of his U.S. House colleagues, and CBS News has learned a controversial donor with ties to a Russian oligarch was one of Santos's major donors.
There's been an increase in alcohol-related illnesses in young adults, says CBS's Nancy Chen.
The CDC defines heavy drinking for men as 15 drinks or more per week. For women, it's 8 or more. Doctors advise those looking to cut back to choose alcohol-free days and exercise instead of going to happy hour.
Officials at the Australian Open have banned flags from Russia and Belarus after more than one of them was brought into the stands by spectators on the first day of the tournament. Country flags are usually displayed during matches, but Tennis Australia officials have now banned flags of the two countries, which are involved in the invasion of Ukraine. This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
The Devil's Advocates.
Jake from Milwaukee, you get the last word this hour.
Okay, well, Trump is totally innocent. But it's obvious that George Soros, Nancy Pelosi, BLM, with Antifa, and then Hillary's emails, with Hunter Biden's laptop, gas, high, Afghanistan, cut and run. I rest my case, Cruz.
What about Benghazi, Jake? You forgot Benghazi.
I'm sorry. And Benghazi, I rest my case.
Follow the Devil's Advocates on Facebook and Twitter.
Hey sis, missed you this morning. Kim told me you weren't feeling well, so I'm just doing a self-care check.
Oh, thank you, friend.
How you doing?
Girl, listen, my energy was so low because I didn't eat breakfast when I got up, so I had to miss virtual yoga with y'all.
Trust me, I understand.
But I'm doing much better now that I've eaten, so I'm back on track.
Great. In that case, let's get some steps in tonight. I'll come over and we can walk around the lake.
Sounds good. Appreciate you being in my business, too. Now, let me get in yours. Did you check your blood pressure today?
I did that and my squats. Okay.
Okay.
High blood pressure is not going to be my friend if I can help it. See you at 6?
Let's get it. See you then.
Now more than ever, it's important that we protect our hearts and the hearts of those we love. Check in on one another and be a part of a healthy blood pressure movement. Rally Your Squad to take the online pledge at releasethepressure.org. Brought to you by the Release the Pressure Coalition and the Ad Council.
Hey, Dad, your prescription will be ready in just a minute. Hey, Dad, Your laundry will be ready in just a minute.
Dad, your lunch will be ready in just a minute.
Hey, honey, why don't you take a minute?
When you help care for a loved one, you give them as much time as you can, making sure they're safe and comfortable. But it's just as important that you take some time for yourself. At AARP, we can help with information and useful tips on how you can maintain a healthy life balance, care for your own physical and mental well-being, and manage the challenges of caring for a loved one. Because the better care you take of yourself, the better care you can provide for your loved one.
Thanks, Dad.
Thank you. You're there for them. We're here for you. Find free care guides to support you and your loved one at aarp.org/caregiving. That's aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media. To learn more, go to our website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Thank you for tuning in wherever you're listening on the Civic Media Network. Thank you for joining for the 1 o'clock hour. As always, you can join the conversation at 844-967-2789. Coming up for the whole hour is David Haynes, who after a journalism career spanning more than four decades, a third of which was at Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, has retired. How's that feeling?
I am in no danger of going back to full-time work anytime soon.
He was also my boss. I am still working at Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He is not. But for the first 15 months of my tenure there, every week, you would be in charge of the teleprompter. Well, first, you'd be in charge of fact-checking and making sure what I was going to say, while opinionated, was accurate.
Correct. Although I think the teleprompter was by far my greatest contribution to the effort.
Absolutely.
And even that, I was not that good at, I have to say.
You were fine. You got better. You certainly got better. But now, instead of just being my boss, he is my friend. And I'm so happy to have you on the show today.
I'm happy to be here. It's awesome. I had a circuitous route getting here. I took the bus all the way from my home in Whitefish Bay.
And that was a trek.
It was. It was kind of interesting. I would not want to be someone trying to work in Waukesha County and living on the east side of Milwaukee and every day and have to do that. But it was fine.
2 hours, you said?
Roughly. Well, 2.5 because I stopped to get a coffee at Colectivo on the way.
Okay.
Sustenance.
But this is the kind of time that you now have that you can enjoy.
I got nothing but time, Chris.
Do you have anything for the suggestion box of for the transit system?
Well, being on time would be good. The second bus was a few minutes late. And as some of you might know, if you've looked outside, it's raining today. But it was fine.
Well, we're happy to have you. Thank you for coming in
person.
And so you've only ever done journalism.
That's right.
So 19 was your first job?
Yeah, I was 19 years old. I knew even before that I wanted to write. And I went to a creative writing seminar my senior year of high school. I thought, oh, my God, I'm going to write a novel or something. And I realized that's really hard. And it doesn't probably pay you much money. So I studied journalism in college. First at a two-year commuter campus near my home in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and got a call one day from the editor of the paper in my hometown of Auburn, Indiana, a town of about 8,000 in northeast Indiana. And it turns out, I didn't know this at the time, but my high school baseball coach knew I was interested in writing and thought, well, maybe he could write about our team. I think hoping he'd get good coverage, but it was a great opportunity for me, and I had a chance to learn how to do it from the ground up.
So you started in college. What were your jobs before you made it to Wisconsin?
So I went to work immediately after college in Fort Wayne, a paper that's now out of business, and we'll talk more about what's happened to the newspaper business later on, but I had a paper in Fort Wayne, an evening newspaper. They used to have evening and morning papers. What a concept. Called the New Sentinel, and I worked there 9 years as a reporter and editor and did all kinds of things. And then I went on, my wife's job took us out to Massachusetts. She was working in Worcester in central Mass, about 50 miles west of Boston, and I found a job in Lowell. And Lowell was this awesome town of about 100,000. About 25,000 of the people living there had recently come to the city from Southeast Asia for a variety of reasons. Oh, wow. They had a huge influx of migrants, but it was a town of immigrants. When I first, and I'm coming from Indiana, which is kind of insular, a little bit homogenous. So I walk out my first day to get lunch in Lowell, and I started counting the languages being spoken, and I got to 6.
Wow.
I heard, I don't know Greek, but I heard Greek. I heard French. I heard Spanish. I heard English. I can't remember the others, but it was like shocking. It's this international city that is a city of immigrants. And so super interesting to work there. The newspaper is family owned. They really cared about the community. And I learned a great deal. But we wanted to get back to the Midwest. And so 1994, both of us landed jobs at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. It wasn't the Journal Sentinel then, though.
Was it the Journal or the Sentinel?
Yeah, I came to the Sentinel.
Okay.
And my wife worked for what was it called? Journal Communications.
Okay.
Which handled the business operations for both newspapers. So she was a circulation manager, one of the top managers in our circulation department. So making sure the door went, or the paper went thunk at the doorstep every morning. And I was hired to start a new business publication called Monday Business for the Sentinel. It was a what we call a tab, so a magazine size. My boss was George Stanley in 1994. And when I left, my boss was George Stanley.
Well, you two are similar in age. So that weird at that point of like your boss? Because what were you at that point? You would have been in early 30s?
Yeah, that's probably what was I? Yeah, 30 something, late 30s.
Okay. Yeah. So you did that, but then at one point you were the education editor, the enterprise editor, the business editor, the opinion editor, and then your final, as my boss, was the ideas lab editor, which was a transition, still opinion, but kind of a transition into more solution journalism. You also were the community engagement coordinator. And so what, because I at your retirement party the other night, one of your colleagues and friends poked a little fun at you that when you made the switch over to opinion, that you aren't always great at infusing it with enough opinion. So what was that transition especially I think what you said before is that you loved writing, but journalism is as much writing as it is getting the information. And so what have you found as the balance of all the different things that you've done, the writing versus editing, the reporting versus opinion, like what different things did it feed you? And like, what advice do you give for people who in this broad world of journalism, where to find the nuggets that feed what you're best at or what you enjoy the most?
So I'll talk about the opinion thing first. And it's really true. That was my friend, Ernie Franzen, who retired, took a buyout in 2017 and left me all alone on the opinion board for a period of time. It's really weird to have an opinion board of one person. I mean, you have a conversation with yourself. I mean, how do you do that? We figured it out. When I first went to the opinion board, I'd been a journalist at that time for 25, going on 30 years. And so I'd never done opinion. And literally the first piece I turned in, Ricardo Pimentel, my mentor, friend, and boss, said, you can put some opinion in here, you know? And so I figured it out. So you talked about, I did have a lot of opportunities to try different things. And I always found that after about 5 years on a job, I was sort of eager to try something else. And the thing about the Journal Sentinel that I always admired, and George is largely responsible for this, along with my former great friend and boss, Marty Kaiser, who retired, I think, around 2016, they created a culture of learning in that newsroom, a culture of collaboration, a culture where people respected one another and learned from one another. And so whenever I made the transition from writing to editing or back to writing again or in the case of working on the opinion board, doing both, I learned a lot. You learn a lot from being an editor about writing. You learn a lot about writing from being an editor. And so those experiences, I just thought were great. But I think the best job I had was the last one I had, where I could do writing and editing and do community engagement and get out of the office.
And so with the community engagement, because obviously the last couple of years, as we've talked about, have been hard. But what did it look like when you first took that on? And also, where do you think what do you think the importance is? And I know we're going to come back to local journalism and newspapers in the third segment of this hour, but because I think that's something that I find really interesting is, like, now that I'm back and I feel like the pivot back towards how do you talk to the people who you're also reporting for and you're trying to give them information that they need, but it's also, it can't be a one-way street. Like, you have to be getting stuff from them. And so, like, the community engagement part is so important. And so how did you approach it when you were in charge of it?
At first, I saw it as a way for us to take our journalism to the public. And so we collaborated with UWM, Milwaukee Public Radio, and did a series of conversations called Across the Divide. At the end of 2016, after that just rancorous, awful election, awful for a number of reasons, as we know, I just was really concerned about the fact that people didn't seem to be able to talk to one another. And so we talked to public radio and said, could we do a series of events that would be focused on bringing people who have different opinions together and having a conversation? So the first one we did was at Maxie's upstairs, there on 68th and Wells. And we had a super conservative lawyer, Rick Essenberg from Will, and a liberal writer, Janet Eisen, who had written a lot for us. And we talked about how to have a conversation. Mm-hmm. And it was great. And then we did subsequent shows on school choice, on immigration. We did another one on education that's slipping my mind. But the idea was, could we have a conversation? Could we bring our journalism with our journalists out to the community? And increasingly, before the pandemic, it became more about, can we get out and talk to audiences that we're not reaching now? So we did a lot of work through a project we called Listen MKE, which eventually took on the library as a partner and Milwaukee PBS as a partner. Did a lot of work in predominantly Black neighborhoods in Milwaukee, just listening, because it was clear to us that we didn't understand what people living in those communities really wanted or needed.
We have to take our first break. I have some more follow-up questions, but sure. Where I want to go next is, because we're losing both you and George, George Stanley is also retired. So there's a lot of institutional knowledge that we are losing. And especially for someone like me who is still learning what I missed while I wasn't living here. So when we come back, I'd like to have a little bit more of a conversation of how Wisconsin has changed since you've moved here.
Sure.
This is As Goes Wisconsin. Our guest is David Haynes. Stick right here.
Give me a boss man, the one that's gonna treat me right. Work hard in the evening, rest easy at night. Big boss man, big boss man, big boss man. Can't you hear me when I call? I said you ain't so big. You just told that song.
I'm looking at the phone lines. I'm seeing some familiar faces. Once in a minute, Gene of Eau Claire.
Well, welcome back, Matt. I really miss you. We've been missing getting woke every morning, but now we'll get woke in the afternoon.
Once in a minute, Andrew of Detroit.
Professor, it's so nice you're back. We missed you during your vacation, and I'm very happy to be in your class for the semester.
Thanks a lot for calling in. I appreciate all my callers.
Tune in to Matt Flynn Direct, Monday through Friday, 3 to 4 p.m.
27% of the American workforce, and some even say 30%, were in unions who had representation and who clearly did not have to worry about whether or not they were going to get their fair share. But I'm definitely going to fight for people who get the short end of the stick in this society only because they don't have representation. That's who I am.
Check out the Earl Ingram Show every day from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. only on WAUK 540 AM 101 FM, The Shaw.
Life had a remote control. You could pause or rewind. Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the 1-minute risk test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
Here's your updated forecast on The Shaw. Chance for isolated rain showers overnight, otherwise cloudy. Lows around 37, winds out of the southwest, 8 to 15 miles an hour. Overcast tomorrow. Chance for isolated rain showers. Highs level off around 39. Overcast again tomorrow night. Lows level off around 31. A dusting of snow Wednesday night through Thursday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 41 degrees.
WAUK 540 AM. Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at WAUKradio.com.
So what did I? Virginia, my home, sweet home, I want to give you a kiss.
She's...
I've been in Paris meeting lots of different
Welcome days. Back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Our guest this hour is David Haynes, who is the recently retired, my old boss, Ideas Lab editor over at Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, where he wore many different hats over the decades. How many years? So if it was a third of your career, how many years in total were you?
Almost 29.
Almost 29. Wow. Yeah. How long he was at Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And one of the things I've now come back and been back for about 2 years and to obviously talk a lot about politics and have opinions about politics, which was some of the things that we worked on together and my videos over there. But there's so much stuff that I wasn't here for between I left in 2003. So there's this 17-year gap of what was happening in the political sphere, what was happening to the state. And so I left about 9 years after you moved here.
So Tommy Thompson was still governor when you left or just left?
Had just left.
So Jim Doyle was, or yeah. McCallum or Jim Doyle.
McCallum, I think, and yeah. Then Jim Doyle, because...
You missed a lot.
I missed a lot. And so as you're now, you know, one of my favorite things of sitting at my desk that was across from your desk at Journal Sentinel is there would be times where you and I would be talking, but then every once in a while, like George would walk by or Carrie would walk by or some of the other like journalists and reporters or editors who've been there for so long. And just the stories you guys have of Tommy Thompson or Walker and as journalists. And so this is a shorter segment, but as far as like what in the 30 years you've been here, how would you describe what changed and what were some of the pivotal changing points of what Wisconsin was like in the 90s versus what it's like now?
Politically.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, the biggest change was the election of 2010. And leading up to that election, Democrats had control of the governor's office. Jim Doyle was governor. He was retiring. So it was an open seat. Tom Baird and Scott Walker were running for governor. But the Democrats controlled both houses of the legislature, and the state Supreme Court was controlled by the liberal wing of the court. After the 2010 election, the Republicans controlled the governor's chair and both houses of the legislature, and that was a redistricting year. And so new governor Walker decided, and the Republican leadership decided, that they were going to play hardball. They didn't do anything corrupt, illegal, but they played hardball. So they gerrymandered the state in 2011. They pushed through Act 10, which I'm sure you've talked about on your show, which basically gutted the public employee labor unions. And that was all under the the guise of closing a budget deficit, which, if memory serves, was $170 million or something. It wasn't huge. But what it was really about was disempowering the Democratic Party in the state, because the foot soldiers for the Democratic Party were those big unions, mm-hmm. the Service Workers Union in Madison and the Wisconsin Teachers Union. And that fundamentally changed, along with gerrymandering, fundamentally changed our politics. And what Republicans in power now going on was at 13 years.
So was it nicer before? Like, were there, was, I mean, because I would imagine that there was always, I mean, two-party politics is always going to have people.
You're always going to have competition. And, you know, going back prior to 2010, there was the biggest scandal I can remember was the caucus scandal, where people who worked for the two caucuses, the Republican and Democratic caucus, were working, getting paid by the government to do political work. And Dee Hall from then the Wisconsin State Journal and a couple of our reporters exposed that. Chuck Kawala, who was a major leader, Democratic leader in the Senate, played a lot of hardball with Tommy Thompson. So I wouldn't say it was nicer, but it got even more bare knuckle after 2010. And I think it was largely because the Republicans, by through the actions they took, again, not illegal, you know, they won. And what I've always said to Democrats who complain is, you shouldn't have lost the 2010 election. But what they did was, by basically stripping the power of the Democratic Party, left the Democratic Party in a rough shape. And it's never quite recovered in the state.
And one of the questions, Jane, I know that you wanted to ask David, it was about open records laws and kind of where we are now, which maybe maybe this was the case even before this sea change, but how much of that, your question that we've already talked about, kind of plays into all of this? And so I'll let Jane.
David, you remember the 4th of July weekend when the Republican legislature tried to gut the open records law, and then there was all this outrage because somebody got wind of it and printed it, and all of a sudden they all backed off. But what's always bothered me is that no one had to author it and say, this is my name on it, and here's my co-author. It was just like, yeah, some anonymous ghost dropped this by, and we decided to push it along. Why is that a thing? How can that be a thing?
Yeah, it shouldn't be a thing. It was slipped into the Budget Writing Committee, which is a joint called the Joint Finance Committee. It was slipped into the budget bill by somebody on that committee. I'm not sure we know even now who did it. It was one of the Republicans. And I think at that time, the Republicans had outnumbered the Democrats on the Joint Finance Committee by like 3-1. But it shouldn't be a thing. And we argued in an editorial on the front page July 3rd, a Saturday. We called it a declaration of secrecy. But, you know, so we take some credit for the fact that they backed off. But I have to say that conservatives and liberals alike were appalled by what they did. And even I mentioned Rick Essenberg previously, very conservative lawyer, runs the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, Will, pretty controversial law firm. But he was outraged by it. And because of that sort of bipartisan outrage, they backed off. But to answer your question, and it shouldn't be a thing. They shouldn't be allowed to do that. We should know what our elected representatives are doing and who's doing it.
Exactly. All right. Which is why that's a good segue, because when we come back, we're going to talk about the importance of local journalism, how it's changed over the years, and where we need to take it to preserve it. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Our guest is David Haynes. Stay tuned.
I've been fighting for the South alone.
A progressive voice from Manitowoc to Janesville. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
CBS News Brief, at least 8 people have been shot during an event to celebrate Martin Luther King in Fort Pierce, Florida. St. Lucie County Chief Deputy Sheriff Brian Hester.
It's really sad on a day that we're celebrating a leader in the civil rights movement, Martin Luther King, and a man who is about peace.
Police in Albuquerque, New Mexico have arrested former state House candidate Solomon Pena on charges of conspiring to shoot at four lawmakers' homes. Mayor Tim Keller.
I hope personally, too, our legislators can breathe a sigh of relief. They can go back to focusing on the legislative session.
Republicans in Congress want to know more about the discovery of documents with classified markings found at places linked to President Biden. CBS's Skyler Henry.
White House officials say they turned over five more documents over the weekend to DOJ officials, and they're fully cooperating with the special counsel's investigation.
CBS News Brief. I'm Christopher Cruz.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which was audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP, and we're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms. Yeah.
We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
Pat, I feel like all the women we have on our show, like our co-hosts, always get too famous for us. And then
I would just like to think that we are fertile ground from which they can blossom. We are the manure from which they spring.
The manure from which they spring. I was going to say holding fort, but I think your metaphor is way better.
Up North News Radio with Pat Krylo airs at its new time from 6 to 8 a.m. weekdays across Civic Media.
Mama, what does the chicken say?
Chicken. Oh, okay.
And a wolf?
Oh, a wolf.
What about the tiny dog? Cat. Aww. Owl.
Ooh, ooh, ooh.
Dolphin? What does the turkey say? Whale.
Whale, so.
Do the giraffe.
Giraffe, really? Okay. Giraffe.
You're not going to get it all right. Just make sure you nail the big stuff, like making sure your kids are buckled correctly in the right seat for their age and size. Get it right.
Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat.
Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
I love this song!
I love nachos.
Loving everything? You might be buzzed.
You know what I'd love? A ride when it's time to head out.
If you see a buzz warning sign, call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. No matter where you're listening across the Civic Media Network or on the Civic Media app, thank you for tuning in. A reminder that you can listen to this as a podcast. If you want to go back and listen to any parts that you might have missed, you can find it at asgoeswisconsin.com/listen or wherever you find podcasts. As always, you can join the conversation at 844-967-2789. Our guest this hour is David Haynes, the recently retired Ideas Lab opinion editor over at Journal Sentinel after he had many different jobs there over the years. But speaking of the text line, you said we have a text?
We do, from the 920. David, what makes the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel better than the other USA Today papers in Wisconsin that people are pulling away from? My family switched from the Oshkosh Northwestern to an independent paper called the Oshkosh Herald because they do more local reporting.
Wow, that's interesting. Well, I don't want to speak to what the other USA Today Network papers are doing in Wisconsin, but I do think that the Journal Sentinel still has, despite some cutbacks in staff, still has a sizable staff that is committed to doing investigative journalism. I've said this before, but I think that, again, despite the cutbacks, we have in that room some of the best young reporters anywhere. A lot of them actually have come from places like the Appleton paper or the Green Bay paper. And so it's always about the amount of staff you have and then how you deploy it. And I haven't worked in those other newsrooms, so I don't know much about them. But I know that in the case of the Journal Sentinel, there's still a lot of talent there and a real commitment to doing the kind of really hard journalism that you have to do to keep people accountable.
And, you know, I think there is, it's interesting because it's so important. Like, I say this a lot. I couldn't do this show and do this show talking about Wisconsin issues without local journalism, right? Doing a 3-hour show, I do not have the bandwidth to be going out and finding 3 hours of original stories that I'm directly reporting on and do the show. So ultimately it ends up becoming like editorializing. And I do the same thing with my videos, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not the person going out there getting all of the source material and the firsthand interviews. I am reading the final product of reporters who are doing all that work and then summarizing it even more or giving opinion on top of it. But like the fact that we're so lucky, I think, still in Milwaukee to have the Journal Sentinel, but in communities around Wisconsin, even that there are for USA Today papers, there are still outlets, but they're understaffed because ultimately so many of our newspapers are getting sucked up into conglomerates what they really care about is their bottom line. And so that kind of transitions into a conversation about the evolutions in your career that you saw with the newspapers.
Yeah, so, you know, I've said this before, but for the first 25 years of my career, nothing much changed. Mm-hmm. You put the newspaper to bed at midnight, and you woke up, and it was on your doorstep in the morning. The last 15 years or so of my career, everything changed to the point that if you've been out of a newsroom for 6 months to a year, there's a lot of things that are different, even in that short period of time. And it's mainly because reading habits have fundamentally changed. Technology has changed how we can read, when we can read. And we want that content sent to us, delivered to us, often over social media. And as a result, the business model of newspapers in particular is just fundamentally broken. Now, there have been... So the business model used to be you sell a subscription to people. That was 20% of your income. 80% of your income was classified and retail advertising. Classified advertising in the Journal in the late 90s, Sunday you might have 80 pages of classified. At $25, $30 for 3 or 4 lines, can you imagine how much money that was?
Yeah.
That supported a huge newsroom. That's all gone. You know, Craigslist and other online marketplaces have taken that away. Retail advertising is far, far less than it used to be. And so that's put great pressure on the business model. It's resulted in big cutbacks. I think the consolidation of newspapers under corporate banners, whether it's Gannett, Gatehouse, Alden, or some other. Look, I think the people at Gannett that I know do really good work. They're very committed to journalism. They're trying very hard to make this work, but I think fundamentally it's hard for a corporate-owned local newspaper. I just think it's hard. It's hard for them to care about 260 markets the way a local owner would care about Milwaukee.
Well, go ahead, Jane.
David, I want to make sure that I'm correct about this, but it's my understanding that having local news outlets, particularly a newspaper, in cities is so important that if you don't have one, it affects your bond rating.
Yeah, there was a study out of the University of Notre Dame 3 or 4 years ago, and I haven't seen it replicated, so it's just one study, but I can see why it would be true. And they found that in communities, and keep in mind, 1 in 4 newspapers have gone out of business since 2004 or 5, according to Northwestern's research of a year ago. So there are many communities that don't have fact-based professional journalism going on in the way, at least, that it once did. And in those communities, this study found that those communities were actually spending more on bond issues. And this isn't because these are bad people running your communities, just because no one's calling them on it. No one's paying attention. No one is raising their hand when they go into executive session illegally, which happens all the time, and saying, no, you can't do that. This has to be an open meeting. That's what journalists do, among many other things. And so there is some evidence for that.
And so what, because I understand from the fundamental side of there, it's a business model, right? You have to be able to have a sustainable business model.
Gotta make money.
Instead of, you know, and so there is certain philanthropy and there are people who want to support local journalism in small amounts, sometimes in very large amounts. I always have a problem with that because I'm like, why is it always up to the very wealthy to decide what gets funded and what's not? But that's a totally different issue for a different day. But what is, if it's not a physical paper, like, is there, because there's obviously at the top, I remember this earlier, midway through last year, during the first kind of announcement of cuts that were going to happen across Gannett properties. And there was an article written that compared New York Times to Gannett. And you and I had this conversation about, it's very fundamentally different products because the New York Times is one product that has a international readership.
That's right.
That is very different than 260 local markets and understanding how do you focus on that market. And so is that the part that's broken, that like the return of independently locally owned newspapers, or is there a way that in a large corporation they could do this right? Like, what do you feel like?
Well, I think they could do it right.
In order to save local journalism.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I think they can do it right. The New York Times, the Boston Globe, the Wall Street Journal, the LA Times, Minneapolis Star Tribune, all have different ownership structures, but they're also doing a great job of selling digital subscriptions, New York Times in particular. It's a little bit different, though, for the New York Times. They're an international newspaper. They have a huge market to draw from. It's harder for a paper like the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. But if you look at what the Journal Sentinel has done, and I give a ton of credit to George Stanley, Greg Borowski, Rachel Piper, our brilliant digital editor at the Journal Sentinel, their strategy has been to build that that well of revenue through digital subscriptions. And, you know, I don't think I'm talking out of school here, but they've quintupled at least in the last few years, and they're going to keep growing that. I think that you need another bucket. And this is where my successor at the paper, Jim Fitzhenry, part of his role.
My new boss.
Your new boss. Jim is awesome. Comes to us from Oshkosh. But part of his role is to amp up pretty significantly the philanthropic funding for the mission of the organization. So digital subscriptions, that's selling a product, you know, the news, but we need to fund the mission as well. And you do that by getting foundations and getting grants and, you know, getting high wealth people to contribute. It used to be that we knew how, look, this community, this region has a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And that hasn't changed in the last 20 years. It still has a lot of money. We used to know how to tap that wealth to produce good journalism and a large staff. I'm fully convinced that there's enough wealth in this region for a staff twice the size of what they have down at 330 East Kilburn. But we don't know quite how to tap that at this point. So it's going to be a combination of a lot of different things. Philanthropic giving, which I think has to be significantly amped up, and they know that. They're working on it. Continuing to work this business model of digital subscriptions. And then, you know, there's still a lot of people that want the print paper, and that's probably going to be fewer days a week at some point down the road. But it's not going away anytime soon.
So this is a bit of a pivot, but mostly because I'm interested in getting your opinion on record about this. So there's also this change. I feel like there's so many different places to get information now. Yep. And I'm throw myself in one of those ways, right? Like the way I got this job, the way I got the job at Journal Sentinel is I was doing the news based off other people's journalism in an entertaining way.
Yeah.
And there's people who do it have much bigger followings who do this on a national scale and an international scale. And because there's so many different platforms, there's so many different channels, there's so many different ways to, the floodgates are open and the barrier to entry is so much lower than it ever was as far as creating content, spreading information, but also then potentially spreading misinformation, conflating opinion with fact-based journalism. Right. And so where do you feel like that's a good thing? And where do you feel like it's a danger to what good journalism is, which is informing democracy?
Well, I just think we have to have people, professional journalists in every community doing fact-based, evidence-based journalism. And I think it's great that people like you and others are doing this work of spreading news in a thoughtful way, but not everyone is thoughtful. And so, yeah, really? Surprise. So if you go into some of the communities that have either no newspaper or zombie newspapers, which have a nameplate but don't really do much reporting anymore, somebody's filling that gap. Are they filling it with good evidence-based information? Often not. And that leads to disinformation. That leads to more polarization in our politics. It leads to what I think are a lot of bad things. So I want to make a quick point here that I think is relevant. I said this at my retirement party the other night. I really believe it. In fact, I'm thinking about writing an essay on it. I think that in every community, Milwaukee, Waukesha, Green Bay, every community, civic leadership needs to take ownership of this in addition to the journalists, because it's a public good. Journalism is a public good. Evidence-based journalism is a public good. Just like you need roads that are in good repair. You need a water system that works. You need a transit system. We would argue in Milwaukee, we really need an NBA basketball team. Thank God for that. But we also need journalism, because we've seen what happens when you don't have it. And so I think we understand that. So I think civic leadership, and I'm talking about foundations, the chamber, should take some ownership for that as well and be part of a larger conversation about how we support journalism in our communities. And I know some journalists blanch when they hear somebody like me say that, because like, we don't want to get in bed with the people we cover. Well, we don't have to get in bed with them. But we ought to have a larger conversation in every community about how we can sustain it. Because without it, without that public good, I think we're not as thriving a community.
Well, on that note, we're going to go to another break, because I don't think that was such a great note to end on for that topic. But when we come back, a little lighter, we're going to talk about what you're going to do now that you're retired. Sure. Wear your pajamas and play crossword puzzles.
I got a new pair at my retirement party, as you know. And some slippers.
Yeah. Well, we have one more segment. Stay with us. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
This local musical interlude is brought to you by Max Inc. Radio. Kelsey Miles. Listen to Max Inc. Radio every Saturday and Sunday, 6 p.m. to midnight. Download the podcast at maxincradio.com. We are local music.
I taught for 20 years until I started forgetting my lectures.
Eventually, he had to quit. Getting his early Alzheimer's diagnosis was hard, but it gave us time to take control of the situation together.
I can't imagine going through this without him.
If you or your family are noticing changes, it could be Alzheimer's. Talk about seeing a doctor together. For more information, visit alz.org/timetotalk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
What grows in the forest? Our imagination and our family bonds. The forest is closer than you think. Find a forest near you at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the United States Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw.
Lows level off around 37 overnight under overcast skies with a chance for isolated showers. Southwesterly winds 8 to 15 miles an hour. Chance for isolated rain showers tomorrow, high of 39, overcast. Cloudy skies tomorrow night, lows around 31. A dusting of snow Wednesday night through Thursday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 41 degrees.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Butler to Windlake. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin on the Civic Media Network. A reminder that we love hearing from you. So if you have a topic that you think we should cover, or an idea for a guest we should have on, or any feedback for me and Jane, or Jane and I, Jane and me.
Us.
Email us at asgoeswisconsin@civicmedia.us. Our beloved guest for this last hour has been, still is, David Haynes. How do you feel about it? This is your first time on the radio?
It's not my first time on the radio, first time with you.
Yes.
But I have to say, I love the bumper music, Jane. I mean, this is, I felt like doing karaoke here.
Jane's very good at, we do have a Spotify playlist where you can find all of Jane's music. She's very good at finding Easter eggs. So we have different analysts and researchers from Wisconsin Policy Forum come on fairly regularly. And she found a parody song called, what is it called?
It's called Get Data.
Get Data.
So, remember the song Get Lucky?
Yeah.
This is Get Data by the Neurotransmissions.
Yeah. And so,
one of my favorite things in the world.
The parody songs, the little Easter eggs, because she knows what the topic is. And so she's pretty good at finding something that's topical and relevant for what the segment's going to be about. So we've talked a lot about journalism, Wisconsin, your career. But what's next? What are you, you're certainly not just going to twiddle your thumbs. I don't think you're someone who's going to not be involved in one way or another.
Right. So I do want to stay involved in journalism in some fashion. And I think there'll be a project or two come my way. I can't talk too much about it yet, but I don't want to work full time, but I do want to do some project work. But in the meantime, you know, I took up painting during the pandemic. And it was mostly just as a way to relax, but I really enjoyed it. So I'm taking a watercolor class with a friend of mine at MATC starting tomorrow.
Nice.
And as one of my retirement gifts from my sister-in-law was some supplies. So I think that'll be fun. Some travel is in the works. I'm actually going to France for 9 days in April. And my wife, Lisa, and I have talked about this, and she said, you can go by yourself. So I'm actually going by myself.
Wow. Which cities are you going to go to?
I may go down to Bordeaux for a bit, but mostly Paris. And it's all about art. I'm the kind of person, when I go to an art museum, I want to stay all day. And my family likes art museums, but not all day.
Okay.
And so they're not reading every plaque like I am. And so that's what I'm going to do.
Sounds lovely.
Yeah.
David,
I think it'll be fun.
Is there any temptation? Because I think of, again, all of the institutional knowledge that you have, all of the dirty rumors that you must have collected over the years. And maybe this is just my inclination because I'm a bad person, but to write a fictional novel called, like, Madison Schmear or, you know, Madison Dirt. There's so much potential there.
Yeah. Now that you mention it. No.
No.
Yeah. I'm not sure I have a novel in me. I remember David Marinus, famous reporters, actually from Madison, who worked at the Washington Post, has written books about Vince Lombardi, about Notre Dame, about Detroit. He was a great author. He came in to do a workshop one time at the Journal Sentinel, and someone asked him, how come you don't write fiction? And he says, because that's not my thing. I do journalism. And I kind of feel that's where I'm at, too.
Well, and it's also, as you said at the beginning of your career, that you thought maybe creative writing.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because it really is. I'm so impressed when people who make that jump, mm-hmm. because there's something about journalism or opinion that you at least start with the facts. And the part of the process is you have to be a good writer, but it's also the order in which you craft an argument or whatever. But there is some pieces there to start with versus a blank page on a script or a novel or a poem, and you're like, this can go anywhere. And the only person who decides where it goes is me. And like, I agree with you that I think it is it's much easier to play with the things that are there versus the imagination of, and no guardrails of like, this could go anywhere until an editor tells me to rein it in. I guess I'm doing dragons now.
Yeah. So I don't think I would have any trouble writing. I've never had a problem with just sitting down and writing. I've done some short fiction, but I heard Stephen King has a great book on writing. I think it's called On Writing. I can't remember the name now, but he compares writing fiction to an archaeological excavation. I always thought about, you have to outline everything and you have to know where you're going. He's like, no, you just write and you uncover the story as you go.
And the characters kind of reveal themselves to you, right?
The characters reveal themselves. I thought that was such a, he gave me such hope.
Do you have a story somewhere in the back?
I don't know. Maybe? I don't know. See, I'm also, another project of mine is a family history of the Haynes side of the family. My great-grandfather came from Northwest Ohio. And sometime between 1870 and 1880, he moved to Indiana. And sometime during that decade, most of his family was wiped out by a plague that swept through that part of the country. They called it black measles, which was probably Rocky Mountain spotted fever, and it killed young people in particular. He had a family of nine, and only a couple of them were left. And so I'd love to get over there and research that, because I think there's something there mm-hmm. to write, particularly having just come out of a pandemic ourselves, about what happened. And I'd just like to know, for our family's sake, that's the legend. That's all we know. And so that's sort of hanging out there, too.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, any parting words on journalism or Wisconsin or advice for those of us who are left here to continue to cover and talk about and hopefully improve?
Well, I think that, one, there's always going to be a place for professional fact-based journalism. It's just really important. I think people inherently know that. And I think civic leadership knows that. But two, as I look, and I'm just going to focus on the Journal Sentinel because that's what I know, I've never seen a better group of young journalists than I see in that room. And I worked with Megan Toohey, who was made famous recently in She Said, the movie and the book. She was higher education reporter when I was education reporter. Megan was fantastic. But there's a large group of young people there under the age of 40 who are really good. And so that gives me a lot of hope. And I think they're beginning to figure out the business model. I think they'll figure it out. It's going to take time, but I think they'll figure it out.
All right. Well, David Haynes, thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Glad to do it. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, that'll about do it for us today on As Goes Wisconsin. Stick around for Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian. Unless you're listening to WXCO in Wausau, then you got the Chad Holmes Show coming up next. But for us, we'll be back tomorrow at 11 a.m. Come back then. But for now, this has been As Goes Wisconsin.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then, you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page, or Squarespace, or Google My Business, or WordPress. But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
Fear you may be missing out? We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. Enjoy listening live or catch up by finding the podcast at civicmedia.us or wherever you enjoy listening to your podcasts.
To protect his family from disaster, Steve used his camera phone.
Done.
By taking pictures of his important documents, Steve can...
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.